This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. This is the Matt McNeil Show, but of course I'm not Matt. We have so much to talk about. Of course, if you're not following anything, you know that there's so much going on right now, both nationally and statewide. I want to talk a lot about what was going on with session ending well, session not ending well, special session, no special session, up and down going on at the Capitol in St. Paul. I'm going to be on today, and I'm also going to be on Friday. Matt is on vacation, and I'm going to be on again Monday and Tuesday sitting in for Matt. Brett is manning the board. How you doing, Brett?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've produced a show with you, so good to see you again.
Yeah, you too. You too. We have a special guest actually live and in person, which is a rare occasion, especially over the last – well, certainly over the last 2 years. And I will call it the Democrat of the day, which I know Matt likes to feature. This is Laura Bresnahan. She's running for the Minnesota State House in District 45A, which is out kind of west of here. And it's actually the district that I live in. So I will be voting for her for sure. And I've been working with her. I've gotten to know her now for, 6 or 8 months. She's a great person to hang out with, but she's also got such a long list of credentials. She is has a PhD in economics, PhD applied economist. She grew up in Minnesota. She grew up in Waconia. She and her husband decided to move back after her long list of career achievements over the years. They're moved back because they want their new two little kids to go to Minnesota public schools out in the area where we know the public schools are doing really well. And advised the Congressional Budget Office in Washington, D.C. on Social Security funding. I'm going to let you add to the list, Lauren. It's so long, I keep forgetting it. What? Tell me some more things about you.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me here as your speaker, Todd. And thank you to AM 950 for all you do for the voice of Minnesota. It is an honor and a pleasure to be here with you today. Like you said, I'm from Waconia. I'm a 4-H kid from Waconia with dreams of coming back and serving the great community that I grew up in to build an economy not only for my kids but for the rest of the kids in this state. So like me, when they go get a PhD or a medical degree or a law degree or become a very successful electrician, they're always going to have a job when they come back to Minnesota. So working on building an economy where we can all thrive and succeed in.
Yes. Some other things. I'm actually now looking at a list of things. Tell me about you're on the National Board of State Society for Minnesota, right? What is that exactly?
Sure. So that was when I was out in Washington, D.C. I am a proud Minnesotan like everybody else listening to this radio show. Minnesotans, we tend to go and come back. And wherever we go, we are proud to represent where we are from. So when I was out in Washington, D.C., I found all the Minnesotans I could. And I was working on the Hill at that time. I was at the Congressional Budget Office forecasting inflation in what's called the Forgotten Ford House Building. So we're a little bit down the hill from the Capitol, and we're not connected through the tunnel system. But we serve the representatives and the senators to provide a nonpartisan view of where the economy is going so they can plan their social security expenditures and so on. And through that process, I got to meet a lot of the staffers on the Hill, and I got involved in this Minnesota State Society, and I raised my hand to say, hey, I want to we need to do more. I sought you out, and I wouldn't have it much rather that everybody knows that you exist and they don't have to search for you. So I was on the committee for – I was on their board to help them expand the voice of Minnesota and the community in D.C., and we would hold social gatherings. Oh, one of the fun things is that we were in the House Softball League. It was a defunct team for a very long time, but we got it together, and it was a bipartisan House softball team, and we had staffers from the Republican side and Democratic side, and we played other staffers from other states, and it was a really exciting experience and experiment, I would say. Yeah. Our t-shirts, my husband still wears it proudly. it was Minnesota on a stick. It was Minnesota in the shape of a pork chop.
Okay, yeah. Very state fair-like. Mm. How do you think your skills in softball will help you if you get elected to the House? No, I'm just kidding. So many other things as well. I know one thing that I was really impressed that with all you do in your very busy career, you volunteer to help people prepare their taxes, low-income people. And you're also on the board of Cargill Veterans Military Support Network. Kind of give us a short explanation of what that is.
Sure. That is one I am very, very proud to be part of. I can serve my country through my economic skills. I am not as courageous as those that are willing to go and fight in that regard. But I can fight in other ways. Mm-hmm. And my parents are of the generation of Vietnam, and I'm of the generation of the War on Terror. And I saw my friends go off, and they'd do three tours. And yes, they'd come back physically, but they wouldn't come back mentally. And they cannot have the families that they wanted to have. They can't hold the relationships that they want to hold. And so I am anti-war, but I am so strongly proud of our veterans and so mm-hmm. pro-veteran. So I have one thing that's, you know, one thing you don't know is I was on Team Red, White, and Blue. They're having something here in Minneapolis very soon. Team Red, White, and Blue is an organization that helps veterans, recent veterans, come back and transition into society. And they do it through physical exercise and community service and community involvement. So that's something I would definitely plug if you're looking to get involved to help your recent veterans. And what I do on the Cargill Veterans Military Support Network right now is I'm really focused on helping our veterans transition into the workforce. Mm-hmm. So how do we translate your skills as a special operations lieutenant, or things I can't even imagine that they've been able to do? And they're ready to retire. They've served. Yeah. And how do we translate those skills into getting a job in the private sector or in the government? And so I'm helping them work on their resumes. I'm helping them get to know and network places within Cargill where I work, as well as other places in Minneapolis, because I want those really strong people to come to Minnesota. It's the best place to live.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it seems that all the training and all the incredible things that they learn when they're in the military, when they come back, they find that they kind of don't know what to do as just being a person coming back home.
That's right.
And like you said, even just making a resume to try and get a job. That's incredible. That's even more – I mean, this is even fun for me because I thought I knew you and I'm learning so much more. Say, one thing that happened the other night was the Speaker of the House of Minnesota came out and door knocked with you.
We
were all there. My daughter Eve was there door knocking. And Speaker Hortman came out. That's an incredible – that didn't used to happen out in our district. You know, I, of course, and people who have heard me on this show before know that I ran for the same seat you're running for now 10 years ago and 8 years ago. And we didn't have any kind of any kind of attention like that because we were so red. And this seems to me to really be a sign that we are turning blue out there. How do you feel about that? And how's your campaign going, nuts and bolts wise?
Great, great question. And I would say really thank you. Thank you for everything that you've done and that the DFL has done out here in this district. So I grew up in Waconia, which is red and still red. I had a fundraiser yesterday in Waconia with the very few out of Democratic families in Waconia. But now we have this chance to flip this district that is increasingly purple, and we have the ability to get it all the way out to St. Bonnie, right? And I would say so much of this is boots on the ground, is knuckles on doors. This is a knuckles on doors campaign. We've been knocking doors since December. And I have been really enjoying the opportunity to not have to wear long underwear under flannel-lined pants, under snow pants, under insulated boots. It makes it a lot easier to door knock. But now we were door knocking in record heat just this past day. No, it depends. It's easier to get to the doors. You have less – it's less cumbersome.
I actually was out on the doors with all of you on Monday, and I was it was, you know, about 100 degrees, and I was surprised at how not bad it was. I was a little scared actually to begin with, but we made it through our whole knock list, and
well,
it wasn't too bad.
For those that don't know this district, please come out. It is a gorgeous place. So the reason why we can door knock in 100 degrees out here in 45A – is because of our beautiful canopy of trees. We have so much nature out here, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to raise my family here, because of the easy access to nature. So even the speaker mentioned it, like, oh, thank you for the tree-lined door knock route. And my response – I wasn't there, but my response would have been, well, all of them are tree-lined door knock routes.
Exactly, yeah. And I know you're quite the outdoorsy person. I thought you were crazy. I was afraid that we picked the wrong candidate. I thought we picked somebody who was absolutely crazy nuts when you were knocking in January when it was 25 below zero with a – so
that's what you get when you get a born and raised local Minnesota girl running for office. I was born in northern Minnesota. The winters don't scare me none.
Yeah. Good. That helps. And one thing also that I know that you've noticed that's kind of a unique thing, as you said, you grew up out in that area, so did I. And I was terrified to first go door knocking when I ran. And then I found that, there are many, many, many Democrats. It's just that the Democrats are afraid to reveal themselves out there. How do you feel about that? Do you feel better about your general area that you grew up in after you've had the chance to actually meet some of the people?
I've always been proud of where I grew up. Regardless, Democrat, Republican, I have been very proud of my community, which is why I wanted to raise my family here. And the beautiful thing about this district is that so I have friends that live in South Minneapolis, where a lot of younger families like mine, they live in South Minneapolis. And the Democrats stick out, right?
Yeah.
We have a type. Where out here – we're the ones, you know, we got the really rusty vehicles and 15 American flags in the yard, and we're the nicest house on the street. Like, you can't stereotype us out here. And that's, I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, the hunters.
Big time.
And they're still, you know, a lot of people that you would think, oh, I'm sure that guy's a Republican. Nowadays, that we're so, you know, become so combative over the last 25 years. But I've known people that I just assumed were Republicans. I get to know them, and they're a longtime Democrat. We should have talked. We should have had a conversation 10 years ago. But tell me a little bit, too. Your husband also has a very respectable direction that he's taken his career in.
Yeah, he is. Thanks for bringing that up. He is an advocate for mental health. Ever since we've met, he worked for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid when we met, and late Senator Wellstone brought in the bill of we need to have mental health treated in parity with physical health. And my husband helped write that and get it drafted all the way until now, where it is the law of the land.
Yeah, it was legislation. He wrote a bill.
Yep. And it is now the law of the land. And he, at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, helped get that drafted and get it prepared and get it out to the states. And now he's flipped to the other side to help. So now he's in private practice and he's helping the insurance companies and he's helping the states make sure that their laws and their practices are in accordance with federal law. And it has been fascinating. And he didn't know that being in this on this side, so on the private side, that he could actually have so much influence and really be able to help those with mental health in a way that he couldn't do when he was working for the government.
Yeah. Yeah. Impressed with him. Your parents have always been teaching you to, you know, that public service is an important thing. I know you've steered your whole career basically planning to someday do something like you're doing right now, going into public service, which people forget that that's what quote-unquote politicians are doing. They're trying to
That's
take
right.
care of things. It's a big sacrifice to run for office. You're a working mom, full-time working mom, and you're still running for office and taking the time to get out there and campaign. I happen to know that your goals in your campaign, your fundraising goals are going extremely well. We've even gotten word that you're like on the top tier of all the Democrats in the state as far as the nuts and bolts part of your campaign. I'm proud to have met you and gotten to know you and work for your campaign. And I know that you have to get going, but it would be great to have you on for the whole 2 hours. What's everybody talking about right now? Well, many, many things, but one of the main things is the economy, inflation, things that you're an expert in.
That's right.
And it would be great to have you on as, you know, from your point of view. And maybe someday we will.
That'd
but if people would like to hear more from you or know more about you, tell us where they should
sure,
go.
Sure. I have a website, Bresnahan for House, Bresnahan for House. You can also find me on social media, on all the outlets, or you can just give me a call or send me an email. Yes, I am busy. I am a working mom. We need more working moms in public office. There are very few of us out there and we're losing that voice. So, thank you for your time. And I'd be happy to come and talk about recession indicators, when we can expect this high inflation to go away. You name it. I'm studying.
Just how powerful Governor Walz is in that he was able to create inflation worldwide. I'd love to hear more about how he achieved that.
I don't know
that.
If I can talk about that
one. Again, Bresnahan for House. It's Bresnahan FORHouse.com. Please go there and you can find out more information about Lauren Bresnahan running in 45A, the district I live in. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your extremely busy schedule to actually show up live and in person. It's way more fun than talking on the phone. I hope you also had a nice time. And so thanks again for coming.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you, AM950.
All right. Let's take a break and come back and I don't even know. As you know, I never know what I'm going to talk about next. But we'll talk about it. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And Brett is on the board playing the funky keyboard, I believe, in that one.
That I am indeed.
Yep. I was drums. No, I was bass. I'm bass on this one.
Oh, you're going bass this time. All right.
This is such a fun bass line. That's why I wanted to play this song. Anyway, Lauren Bresnahan we just had on. We were talking about her campaign, and I mentioned that the Speaker of the House, Melissa Hortman, from St. Paul, she's not from St. Paul, but the state Speaker of the House came out and helped with Lauren's campaign, which is a big deal out in our district, which Lauren's running in the district I live in. And so we're making a lot of progress out there. They call it the outer ring. We're getting further and further out to the outer ring maybe 15 years ago or so, maybe 16, 17 years ago, Steve Simon actually won in Hopkins area. And that was a big deal back then because that had been red for years and years. And a couple other people won for the first time. DFL candidates won. And after that, it stayed blue. And then there was a little bit more of a tier moving out into Lake Plymouth, and that started to go back and forth, blue and red. And now it's our turn. We're turning blue way out by Lake Minnetonka area and further, a little further than Lake Minnetonka even. I was gonna go through the towns that she is running in, but it's out kind of by like Wayzata and Navarre, if you even know what that is, Orono, Excelsior, all the way out to St. Bonifacius, which is way far west. It's a really big district. But with redistricting, it's a much better situation for Lauren than it was for me. It was kind of impossible for me. But not only was it harder for me because of the lines and because we hadn't yet developed and because there hadn't been as many DFL people moving into that area, but also Lauren's a way better candidate than I was. She started door knocking when it was cold outside. That's something I wouldn't do. So, and she's a stellar candidate. And the reason I brought up Melissa Hortman again, the Speaker of the House, is going to be here. I'm sitting in again for Matt on Friday, and Speaker of the House Hortman is going to call in at 4 o'clock, and we're going to be interviewing her. And like I said, she and I saw each other the other night, and we talked about all that's going on in St. Paul with the session. I'm going to get into more of that later. We've been talking about Minnesota now for the first half hour. I thought maybe we would switch to some national stuff because that's also insane. But we do have more to say about what happened during the session. And I thought I would run through some of the stuff as to kind of set up the conversation that we'll have at 4 o'clock on Friday with the Speaker of the House. She's got a lot to say about what was going to happen, and then it didn't, and then it looked like it maybe was again, and then it wasn't, and all of the back and forth, and basically people breaking their word, and it wasn't her, and it wasn't Governor Walz. I'll say that much. There's basically three people in the room talking after the session ends without, you know, getting everything done they were supposed to get done. There's a big reason for that as well. But then the three people in the room include the majority leader of the Senate, who is a Republican. And then, of course, Melissa Hortman, who's a DFLer, and Governor Walz, who's a DFLer. Those three people basically are making the decisions and trying to come up with a deal and maybe go to a special session. And one of those three people seemed to go back on their word. And to give you a hint, it was neither Governor Walz nor Speaker Hortman. I know she's got a lot to say about that. We'll see how much we can get her to say on the air, because we all have more to say off the air than we're allowed to say on the air. I'll be the bad guy and let her be the good cop. But I have a feeling she might, step on my toes a little bit. We'll see how that goes. You'll have to tune in 4 o'clock Friday, 4 o'clock p.m. on AM 950. Brett, have you been watching the committee hearings?
I have, yeah.
You have, mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that popped into my head, we'll take a break in a little bit, but one point that I wanted to bring up that I thought of, like, you probably then saw the part where Ms. Moss was talking about her grandmother. So Shay Moss is her name. She gave a very, very inspiring little speech about – she was asked, why did you become a poll worker? And what do you like most about it? And she said, helping people, helping disabled people, helping elderly people who can't get to the polls, helping them get signed up for absentee voting, helping them get their ballots in, helping them get to where they need to go. And basically helping people was her favorite thing. She felt empowered by helping other people And it was a very impressive and inspiring little spiel that she gave as her answer to that. And it was heartbreaking to see that she left doing it because she was so harassed. Now, I'll tell the story about that a little bit more when we come back. But the point I wanted to make before we take a break is she was telling about her grandmother. So she and her mother were targeted by Trump, basically, and Giuliani. And that's what we'll talk about a little bit later. But also some people came knocking on her 70-some-year-old grandmother's door, and her grandmother went and opened the door, and they shoved their way through the door, came in the house, and were yelling and saying that they were going to have to make a citizen's arrest, and they were looking for her daughter and her granddaughter, and they were going to arrest them. Citizen's arrest. How insane – that would be terrifying for anybody to just go up to your door, open it because somebody knocked, and have that happen. This woman who is completely minding her own business, 70-some-year-old elderly woman, and this happened. And I just thought, who are these people? You know, I had heard some of this story about Shay Moss before and her mother, and it was unbelievable. But – there was even more to learn on the hearing yesterday, and it absolutely blew my mind. And I just thought, with that coupled up with what we're seeing, what they've done at the Capitol on January 6th, and we're seeing so much more footage, these people are monsters. And I was thinking, okay, this kind of started when 10 years ago with the Tea Party, and they all started dressing up in, you know, costumes from the Revolutionary War period, and they all pass themselves off as, you know, being like the founding fathers. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about why they're not like the founding fathers, what the vast differences between these idiots and the actual founding fathers and other patriots from our revolutionary time, and what the difference between what they think is a revolution in this country and what the actual revolution that happened when the founding of this country happened. And we'll also tell you a little bit more about Shay Moss's story. When we come back, let's take a short break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil on The Matt McNeil Show for this Wednesday. I'll be on – Matt's on vacation, and I'll be here today, Friday and Monday and Tuesday, while Matt slacks off on his vacation. This just in. Moderate House Republican Representative Don Bacon tells CNN that after watching the January 6th committee hearings, he will not be supporting former President Trump in a 2024 Republican primary if he announces he is running. The tide is turning. These committee hearings are making people change their mind. Before the hearings began, just a little more than a week ago, there were about 52% of Americans that thought that Trump was should be held responsible and get in trouble for what he did on January 6th. That's we're talking about being charged with a crime, not just generally being held responsible, but being charged with a crime. That has gone up 10 percentage points. Right now, the newest numbers are 62% of independents think Trump should be charged with a crime. That's a huge deal. So we're seeing more and more people. I'm seeing people on Twitter saying, hey, my mom voted for Trump twice. She watched these committee hearings, and now she thinks he's a monster and will never vote for a Republican again. I saw one guy say, my dad, finally, I got him to watch the committee hearing, and now he says he wants to watch all the rest of them. The tide is turning. And you can see why if you're actually watching the committee hearings. I read all those books that came out last year. I think I read four of them. I've talked about them on the air here quite a lot. They're mind-blowing books, and And I thought, okay, they're going to be redundant. One of them was I Alone Can Do It by Carol Lenning and I should have wrote down all the authors' names and everything. But I remember talking about that one on the air here. There was another there were four books total. The last one I read was by Jonathan Carl called Betrayal. And all four of those books had more things in it that the other books didn't have. So it was almost like reading one huge, big, fat book with some redundancy, but still more to learn in each of those books. And so watching these hearings, my wife Heidi, who had not read those books, she would come up to me and say, "Can you believe blah, blah, blah?" And I'd be like, "Well, no, I knew that happened." And she's like, "Did you know blah, blah, blah?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I knew that." And so then I started to realize, okay, I should probably be less obsessed with all of this and spend some time getting outside. And, well, I did read the books outside, I guess, but still, it made me worry about myself and my obsession with all of this a little too much. But it also made me realize that a lot of other people didn't know a lot of these unbelievable things that I did know. And still my mind is being blown watching these committee hearings. There's still so much more new stuff happening. So I told you we were going to talk about a couple things when we came back. I don't want to not do that. The difference, I thought about this quite a lot over the last 10 years. So these people, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes to a certain degree, starting with the Tea Party people. Now, of course, they kind of came out of about 15 years, starting with Newt Gingrich deciding that the Republicans and Democrats have to be complete enemies with each other. He started that in 1993-4 at the beginning of the Clinton administration and divided this country way more than it ever had been. Well, maybe not ever. I mean, we were pretty divided during the Civil War. But divided this country more than most of our lifetimes. And it led to then, the first African-American president being elected and then a big backlash of kind of some racist people, and they started some weird groups, one of them being the Tea Party. And it was not grassroots. It was paid for by big money. And these people were just like Trumpers are. They were fooled into what they were saying, what they were protesting for, and all this kind of stuff. And but I've often thought, okay, so they think of themselves as revolutionaries. So and I've put a lot of thought into where would I be during the Revolutionary War period? Would I be on the side of like the Tory side, kind of going, "Man, you people are crazy. Somebody's going to get hurt. Why don't you just shut up? And you know, the king has been taking care of us." Or would I be on the side of this is unfair. We need to break off from the monarchy. Now, of course, there's a lot more to it than that. The British were using the colonies, and they had too many colonies. Their empire was too big. They didn't have money. They didn't have enough money. They used a lot of the money in the French Indian War, it was called by some, and they thought that the colonies in the United States owed them for fighting that war for them. And that's why a lot of the taxes that happened. You've heard of the stamp tax. We don't have time to go too deep into this, but the stamp tax was even before the tax on tea, and that ended up causing the Tea Party. And so people were seeing more and more that the British Empire was using the colonists to pay for things that weren't the colonists. They were trying to gain money from the colonies to do things in other parts of the world because they were having trouble holding on to their empire. And the colonists in America saw that and decided, you know, we've been governing ourselves for by that time, 150 years or so, and we know how to do this better, and we're going to break off and form our own country. And of course, the occupation of the British soldiers, especially in Boston, starting in 1770 after I can't remember what it's called now, the Boston Massacre. The soldiers basically were in control of Boston, and there was a good 5-6 years of really bad things going on between the colonists and the soldiers. And that's another big thing. And then, of course, it led to people getting killed. Farmers who were, you know, part of the militia, but very unofficial. It started to get nasty really quick. And so there was a lot more fervor going on. There was a lot more legitimate reason for why the people in the colonies stood up against, they called it tyranny, because basically the British people were taxing the colonies, and the colonies had no say in what that tax money was going to be used for. Now, these people who broke into Shea Moss's grandmother's house and were yelling at her, pushing her around, and all these people who stormed the Capitol and are – now the Proud Boys have said – this came out also in the committee hearings. The Proud Boys admitted under oath that if they would have got their hands on Mike Pence, they would have killed him. If they would have got their hands on Nancy Pelosi, they would have killed her. They were going to – they want to kill our current – Congress people, our vice president, who is a Republican, the vice president of the guy that they are now bowed down to, you know, their golden calf that they've made. And there's a big difference. They're being fooled by Donald Trump, who's nothing but a con man. He's not even a – he doesn't even hold – he's not the king. Here, the tyranny is being done by him, not against him. And all these people are basically just being fooled by a con man. That was also proven quite a lot in these committee hearings. Trump trying to raise money after January 6th and saying, you know, just basically lying, saying, you know, give your money to the RNC. We need to take back America. Biden is going to run America. And these people send money in. They're being shystered. He's a shyster. They're being swindled. They're not patriots standing up for their freedom against tyranny by any means. All right. Anyway. We'll talk a little bit more. I'll tell you more about Shea Moss's story because it's also unbelievable. When we come back, we'll take a short break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Brett and Todd sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show today with Brett on the board. I wasn't in that song. Were you? Did you play anything?
I don't think I was in that one either. Yeah. No. Yeah. I missed the cue on that one.
Yeah.
I got kicked out of the band.
Yeah, that's not my guitar sound going on, I know. So it was not me. I was talking about the differences in the people who think they're patriots now but are really just being swindled by a con man. And the people who were patriots back in the 1770s and 80s when our American Revolutionary War went on. In order to remind myself more about it and also check myself, I actually got out my Blu-ray copies of the John Adams HBO series. Did you ever see that, Brett?
Unfortunately, not that one yet.
You should watch it. I recommend that to anyone. It's a really, really incredible show. It came out in 2008, but it seemed – I mean, it's so well done. Laura Linney, who a lot of people now know from what's that show? It's a lake in Missouri. Why can't I – it's a huge show. Anyway, Paul.
Let me see if I can pull it up here.
Ozark.
Okay, yeah, there okay. We go. Yeah.
Laura Linney. She played Abigail Adams. John Adams was played by Paul Giamatti. Anyway, I checked the second episode again because it's the one where they basically work out the Declaration of Independence in 1776, and. It's right when the Bunker Hill happens, and so the very first skirmishes that happened in Boston happened in 1775, almost a year ahead of that. But, you know, on TV, you can make a year go by in an hour if you want to. So anyway, it starts basically with the skirmishes starting up, and John Adams, of course, his part in it, and then there are a lot of stars that we know, Thomas Jefferson, you know, George Washington, all those guys are in this show. Actually, they were actors playing those guys, and yeah, it reminded me definitely. I checked myself, and it's like, yeah, these people who stormed the Capitol are nothing like George Washington. I mean, it's ridiculous. So. This next segment that we're going to do is called There's a Reason Rudy Giuliani Looks Like a Ghoul. And it's because he is a ghoul. And I'm cleaning up my language a lot in that last sentence. At least three words that I had to leave out because I'm on the radio to get through that sentence. Why does Rudy Giuliani look like a ghoul? Shea Moss and her mom, they call her Madam Ruby. Her name is Ruby. And Shea Moss got her mom to help out working in the polls. And they were counting votes. They were working all night. They you know, did all kinds of poll working. Shea Moss, a younger woman, of course, has been doing it for more than 10 years. She got her mom to come and help out even during the pandemic. These two women, to me, that is heroic and patriotic right there. So this video that you may have heard of that where people showed it to Trump and then he was like, they had suitcases under the tables. They would pull the suitcases out and there was at least 18,000 votes, all for Biden, none for Trump. We know it for sure. We were able to go zoom in and we could see there was all these suitcases, at least 18,000, and it was complete BS. These were the actual containers that they always have used in Maricopa County, Georgia. Am I getting that county right? Oh, I'm so bad with names.
Fulton County is the big one in Georgia. Yeah,
was it Fulton? Anyway, in Georgia, and these two women were among a couple other poll workers. And at one point, the mother handed a little thing to the daughter. Giuliani then went to the Georgia legislature, and of course it was a Zoom meeting because it was early 2021 or late 2020, actually, maybe. And he's talking about this, and he said he called Ruby. Well, he used their names, so of course they got doxxed basically by Rudy Giuliani. And there's video of him I did not know existed. I had never, in all those books I read about all of this, I never heard this. He said, at one point, the one person hands a little zip drive to the other one. And they're professional poll workers. They're professional cheaters. They're hustlers. They go around the country and do this all the time, which is a complete lie. It's just this sweet old woman and her daughter has been trying to help elderly and disabled people vote for more than 10 years. And they were just doing their work, going late into the night, counting the votes in Georgia like happens during every election, using the containers that are little on rollers that they pull out from under the table. And this Giuliani and Trump were saying these were suitcases full of fake ballots. And they were scanning them more and over and over. And he was calling these women criminals. And, I mean, it was so vile. I you have to see the video of him doing this. It's incredible. And then when she was asked, so what was that thing that your mom handed you? She said, she handed me a ginger mint. And that's what Giuliani was going off of. And Trump, the president of the United States, turning his crazy mob on these two innocent women who I consider being the heroes and the patriots in this story. Rudy Giuliani is a ghoul. These people are evil monsters. It gets my blood boiling. We'll come back and I'll tell you at least one funny story that I heard about so we can have a little bit of a laugh. We haven't done that yet, so we'll come back for the second hour in just a few minutes. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is what you are listening to. And you're listening to the Matt McNeil Show. But I'm not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in. Matt is on vacation. I'm here today, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday. Like I said before, we'll be having Speaker Melissa Hortman on Friday for an interview talking about stuff going on down in St. Paul at the Capitol. I'm going to lead into that here in a second. But both Brett and I were really surprised during the break. We were absolutely inundated with phone calls from actual ghouls. And they made the point that I owe them an apology. And I agree with them. I owe them an apology for calling Rudy Giuliani a ghoul. I did not mean to insult actual ghouls. Rudy Giuliani is worse than a ghoul. Not that you're bad ghouls. Actually, some of these ghouls were very nice. Didn't you think so, Brett? I was surprised.
They were nicer than Rudy Giuliani, I'll tell you that much.
That's for sure, yes. So I told you somebody just tweeted this, and I got amusement out of it. So why not say it on the radio and see if it can help other people just have a laugh? Somebody told this story of a friend of theirs. Have you ever seen the movie The Exorcist?
I have, yes.
You have? Okay. It's so weird being the age I am because people that I just, see all the time, I'll say, hey, you know that Duran Duran song? And they'll be like, who? So it's like I never know if you – so I'm surprised. The Exorcist came out when I was little. But anyway, this guy knew a friend of his who was reading – The Exorcist, and the guy actually got so scared of it and kind of felt like the book was evil. He was just like, I can't even finish this. It's just creeping me out so much. It feels like there's some weird evil going on. And he threw the book in a river because he thought the book needed to be, drowned out, I guess. So he felt so strongly about it, he threw the book in the river. And then this friend who knew the guy, who was telling the story, he said, so I immediately went to a bookstore, bought the same copy of The Exorcist, held it under my sink for a little bit, and then snuck it into his desk drawer.
I like that. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a funny story. Anyway, comedy bar is low.
I thought you were saying when he threw the book away, I was going to say, this guy must be a Republican if he's trying to get rid of books.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Here's my attempt, yeah.
It wasn't trying to teach kids anything.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Those are the only ones. So last hour we talked to Lauren Bresnahan and we talked about Minnesota things for about a half an hour. And then we talked about national things, mostly the committee hearings. We answered the question, why does Rudy Giuliani look like a ghoul? And so now we're going to go back to Minnesota. And I'm going to start with kind of what I consider breaking news. This just in. Only about 2 hours ago, Tim Pawlenty, he's the last guy to ever win statewide office in Minnesota. And that was way back in 2006.
Which was kind of a fluke, by the way, going back to that election.
Exactly.
Could have been longer.
I know. Yeah, it very well could have been. It was kind of a fluke. He was a very moderate Republican, but I called it for years. He cut so much funding out of so many things in Minnesota. For instance, we used to have an amazing army of plows whenever we got snow in Minnesota, and he cut so much funding to MnDOT, which is the Minnesota Department of Transportation, that plows were sitting in garages after snowstorms because they couldn't pay enough people to drive them and they couldn't pay for gas. And he cut so much funding, and then roads got all mucked up because they didn't plow properly. So we had ice on the roads and then that makes for more potholes. And, it ended up the bridge fell down. The biggest bridge in the whole region fell down when people were trying to drive across it, including a school bus. 13 people at least died. So Tim Pawlenty, anyway. But he actually said something today, 2 hours ago, that I agree with, and it's kind of breaking out here. He tweeted, Minnesota should move up its presidential primary so it's held at or near the start of the process. Minnesota's tradition of incredible civic engagement would add huge value to the nominating process for both major parties. I could not agree more. And I can't believe it's Tim Pawlenty saying it, but I cannot agree more. And then shortly after that, R.T. Rybak chimed in. He was the mayor of Minneapolis for quite a while. He tweets, I agree on this point with Tim Pawlenty, and or have Minnesota combine with Wisconsin, Iowa. Okay, well, I don't know if I agree with that. But then, of course, Ken Martin, the chairman of the DFL, the state DFL. Thank you, Governor Pawlenty. That's something I didn't think I'd hear Ken Martin say. I couldn't agree more. Another thing I wouldn't think I would hear Ken Martin say, or myself for that matter. Both parties, Republican and DFL, would benefit tremendously. But most importantly, Minnesotans from all political persuasions and in every corner of our state would have a huge voice in selecting the next president. I very strongly agree with this, and I think it's atrocious that Iowa is one of the first, so that everybody thinks, you know, the way Iowa goes is the way the United States is going to go. That's silly. I'm sorry, Iowa.
The only people who would miss it would be radio stations in Iowa who just make a mint on those things.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, that's one of the only things that Iowa really gets much attention for. Sorry, Iowa. You're kind of a boring place. My uncle lives there. I've visited there a lot. I think at least my uncle's wife agrees with me. Iowa's a very boring place. I don't know about my uncle, but
that was my first radio job in Western Iowa. Not a lot out there.
Not a lot out there. I know. Yeah, isn't that they send when you're super young, you get sent in the middle of nowhere where you can't make a friend. You're taken away from all your high school friends. This, you know, happened to me right out of Brown Institute. Leave all my high school friends. I moved to Burns, Oregon. The nearest town in either direction was 130 miles away. It was way up in the mountains in a dust bowl that's way up in the mountains. And it was like a ghost town. And there I am. I'm, you know, 20 years old, lonely, you know.
Everyone's, under 18 or over 40 pretty much in these small towns.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tough business, people. It's actually why I'm not actually in it. I was in the business, but now I just, you know, sit in sometimes. Anyway, what I did want to talk about, I'm going to read two articles, basically, both written by Patrick Koulikan, our friend here at AM 950. And written for the Minnesota Reformer, who is a stellar journalistic entity. They're new on the scene. When did they start? Only like 2 years ago?
If that even.
And they have Minnesota handled and deep. I mean, they go deep. Patrick Koulikan is one of their reporters who really dig in, and they release stuff. You know, I think before half the people in the stories realize that anyone knows about it yet. So, and they're a great source for preparing for a show like this. And so thank you, Patrick Koulikan. But the reason I'm picking out these two articles is because the juxtaposition of them from each other is, I think, remarkable. Here is one from May 15th, 2022. Governor Tim Walz and legislative leaders have agreed to the broad outlines of a deal that would divide up the state surplus evenly between tax cuts, spending increases, and money put into reserve. Leaders of the DFL majority House and GOP-controlled Senate and the DFL governor have agreed to use $4 billion for tax cuts, $4 billion on spending increases during the next 3 years, while leaving another $4 billion in the bank to soften the blow of a potential recession. If the agreement is passed and signed, they would spend $1.6 billion in tax cuts by the same amount – oh, and tax cuts by the same amount during the next fiscal year. So – $1.6 billion in spending and also $1.6 billion in tax cuts in a year. During the two-year budget cycle that begins in July 2023, they'll spend $2.4 billion and tax cuts by the same amount. The agreement is a surprising show of bipartisanship during what promises to be a tumultuous election year, with all 201 legislative seats up for election, meaning the whole House and the whole Senate in Minnesota, and also the governor's election. The divided legislature must now fill in the details, which won't be easy as lawmakers race to finish before their May 23rd deadline, which afterwards only Walz can call a special session. He adds then, Patrick Houlihan adds, for months, lawmakers on both sides have been posturing about what to do with the $9.2 billion surplus, with Republicans proposing permanent tax cuts and Democrats seeking spending increases, which is the usual argument, and Democrats wanting especially education increases. By the way, raising money on education in the long run helps public safety. Police have said that. That's another story we could go into. Maybe I'll dig into that more, and we'll tell that one of these days I'm sitting in. But the Democrats are offering solutions that will help a bunch of things. The Republicans are just saying, we want permanent tax cuts. But for as divided as they have been, I remember back in the middle of May hearing about this and being surprised and going, you know, that ain't bad. That's, you know, I don't completely agree with it, but it's a compromise. And it sounds like they're ready to sign it. He also adds, an early draft of spending plans showed $1 billion of the new spending going to education, $1 billion going to health and human services, and $450 million to public safety, with smaller increases in other areas. So try and remember that little bit of it. I'll repeat that after we read the next article, which happened a month later on June 16th. This also written by Patrick Houlihan. Republicans and Democratic farmer labor lawmakers broke off negotiations Thursday, leaving billions of dollars on the table that will leave school districts scrambling to deal with budget shortfalls and local governments without public works money to complete important projects. Minnesotans confronting the highest inflation in decades won't see any direct payments or tax cuts to ease the pain of high gas and grocery bills. DFL Governor Tim Walz and House Speaker Melissa Hortman blamed the Republican majority Senate. Walz said at a news conference held by both he and Melissa Hortman, he says, this one is deeply disappointing because it feels like we were negotiating with ourselves over the last few weeks. Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller blamed the Democrats' desire for more spending. Miller said in a statement, even with a bipartisan legislative agreement to cut income taxes and end the tax on Social Security benefits, Democrats weren't willing to pass this bill without billions more in spending. Okay, we're going to stop there for a second. And if you remember, just about 3 minutes ago, when I read that it was a bipartisan agreement, $4 billion for tax cuts, $4 billion on spending increases during the next 3 years, and leaving $4 billion. And then also $1 billion of the new spending going to education, $1 billion going to health and human services, and $450 million to public safety. Jeremy Miller agreed on all of those things on May 15th. And on June 16th, he says something completely different. Because lawmakers and Walz, going back to the article here, because lawmakers and Walz agreed to a two-year budget last year, the government won't be shutting down, at least. But inflation and the ongoing pandemic have created urgent needs for school districts, hospitals, state agencies, and the millions of Minnesotans they serve. Miller had agreed to the broad outlines of a bipartisan agreement about a week before the end of the regular session in May. That deal called for $4 billion for tax cuts, $4 billion in spending increases, and $4 billion in the bank. Lawmakers were never able to get the agreement passed into law, however. Former State Senator Scott Jensen, the likely GOP nominee for governor against Walz this fall – well, he is. Well, I guess he's in a primary still. But anyway, He said that he called Republican senators during the final week of the session and urged them to hold off. Republicans expect to win the upcoming legislative election in November when all 201 seats will be on the ballot. A GOP trifecta, meaning they would win the Senate and the House and the governor's mansion, a GOP trifecta would leave them with billions of dollars to use on tax cuts, which over time would help them achieve another goal, a sharp reduction in the size of government. Okay, so this is kind of a little class we're taking here now. Keep those two things, especially what I just said about the Republicans' desire to reduce the size of government, in your head through this next break. And we're going to come back and talk about what happens when that happens. But we'll take a break. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. If you'd like to call in, it's 952-946-6205. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. If I didn't just say that, I think, I don't know. I'm losing my mind here a little bit. We'll be right back. Come on. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Here comes your drum. There we go.
Had to get the drum in there. That's
yeah. Yeah, you were on the drums, I think. I remember. This was years ago, and we were both super drunk. But I think you were on the drums. Okay, so does everyone remember what we're covering here? We just talked about how Jeremy Miller and the Republicans think that they're going to win and then take over everything, and in 2023 then they will get their wish of reducing the size of government. Now let's review what happens when they do that, because they keep doing it over and over again. It started primarily when Reagan came in, and Reagan did the whole, you know, the scariest words are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. So, you know, trying to vilify the government. That's what the Republicans started doing 40 years ago now. And he started working with the trickle down. We've all heard that. Where if the rich people stay super rich and don't have to pay taxes, all of their wealth will trickle down to that poorest, poor guy panhandling on the street corner. And everybody will have a grand life in the United States. That's what they said starting, well, actually more than 40 years ago. But that's what they started to actually try and put into practice. Well, the plan that demonstrated how the disaster of this the best was, I don't know if you remember the name, Governor Sam Brownback. So this is Kansas. Governor Sam Brownback is notorious for what is known as the Kansas Experiment, a bold effort to assert the power of limited government. It's exactly what the Republicans in Minnesota want to do if we don't vote and make sure DFL hangs on to the House and the governorship and wins back the Senate. So we're going to take a lesson now from back in 2012. The Republican governor pushed reforms through the state legislature that dramatically cut income taxes across the board. Brownback boasted the plan would deliver a shot of adrenaline to the Kansas economy. But the opposite happened. Brownback promised the tax cuts would lead to an extra 22,000 jobs over the next 5 years. It also reduced the number of tax brackets for individual income from 3 to 2. The theory of the plan, supply side or trickle-down economics, is a divisive one. For decades, Republicans have touted the economic theory, which seeks to create growth through lowering taxes and decreasing regulation. This is something said – oh, well, okay – Arthur Laffer. He's a real laugher. He's an economist who advised President Ronald Reagan. Here's a quote from him. Any serious model tells you that economic growth always leads to increases in revenues, not reductions in revenue. Now, that's something that's true. Economic growth does do that. But cutting taxes and regulation does not cause economic growth. So let's read further about what happened in Kansas. When the tax cuts went into effect, finally in 2014, their failure was seen almost instantly. State revenues plummeted by almost $700 million in 1 year. To put it in context, the state general fund budget is about $6 billion. So that's more than a 10% revenue loss in 1 year for the entire state. That's a lot for any government to have to make up. State lawmakers tried to balance the budget by tapping into reserves and the highway fund. They put construction projects on hold, pension contributions dropped, and Medicaid was cut. So, I don't know. I'm not an expert at math, but when he said it would create 22,000 more jobs, but what really happened is construction projects got put on hold. Well, that sounds like they lost jobs. The state also refashioned the school funding formula and closed and consolidated several school districts. School funding consumes about half of Kansas's budget. Since the 1970s, the state government had been moderately conservative and pretty much reflected the nature of Kansans. Then during the Tea Party wave in 2010, when hundreds of congressional and state government seats were won by Republicans, including Brownback, the Kansas legislature moved further right. Brownback, who had served 14 years in the U.S. Senate, was also elected as governor. Because of the state's deficit problems, Brownback did not run for the president in 2012, which is what he wanted to do. Uh-oh. And he barely won re-election for governor in 2014. Republicans in the legislature voted to overturn his tax cuts with the support of Democrats who helped override the governor's veto. The 2016 election saw the Kansas legislature grow more moderate again. So, huge, huge, and very quick failure. We don't hear that talked about too much in this atmosphere, and that's because Republicans want you to forget. Because Republicans want to, again, quoting that last article, Jeremy Miller and Scott Jensen and Kurt Dowd, if they get put in power again, a GOP trifecta in Minnesota would leave them with billions of dollars to use on tax cuts, which over time help them achieve another goal, a sharp reduction in the size of government. We had a bad deficit problem. We earlier mentioned Tim Pawlenty. When he was governor, we had deficit problems all the time, and he cut. He cut taxes too, excuse me. And we had constant deficit problems. And those deficit problems were very quickly turned around, of course, when the DFL took over in St. Paul. So let's talk about that when we come back from our break. We'll take a short break. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil with Brett on the board. And we will be right back. These are not musical instruments. What kind of crazy music is this? Oh. Oh, heavy metal guitar. That was you. That really heavy. Anyway, I digress into music again. Too much. Sorry about that. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This just in. The number of votes for down-ballot Republicans that exceeded the number of votes in Georgia for Trump, 33,000. That's a part of the reason why Trump thinks he won Georgia is because all the other Republicans got 33,000 more votes than he did. He can't understand why people wouldn't vote for him if they're voting for other Republicans. Why are they not voting for me? Why are they not voting for me? All these other guys got all these votes. That means I won. Anyway, We're going to get to talking about what I said we were going to talk about. But first I'm going to take a call from Chaska, Kansas. Lynette. Hey, how you doing, Lynette?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good. It's been way too long since I've heard your voice.
Well, here it is. I just tuned in and you were talking about Republicans. And, you know, it's kind of like maybe that's what our souls come here to learn at this place, because it seems like Republicans keep going back to the things that don't work. It's a mental disorder. It's like when you live in a family and you have dysfunction, and, you know, maybe the family goes to counseling and some people get it and some people don't get it. But if you're just going to always dictate to other people and, oh, I got to be the boss, you know, that's not listening to people. That's not working with people. It's not healthy. And they keep going back to an unhealthy mindset.
Well, it's the definition of insanity when you keep repeating something that keeps failing over and over again. And that's what they want to do with these tax cuts again.
Again. Yeah. But then they don't care to know what it's just like, well, this is what I like. This is even in the hearings for Trump, like, you know, one of the people, I forgot his name, but he just said, you know, I'm dealing with people's hearts. Because he said, I would say, look, here's the facts of what, you know, Trump was doing. And they're like, oh, I know. But in my heart, I don't think he would have done that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So what are you going to do? You know, people have this feeling that they voted Republican their whole life. Like yesterday, I think Matt was saying, like, look, if you can't bring yourself to vote Democrat, then don't vote. I think that's very good advice.
Yeah, and that's what they did in Georgia. They still voted for their, you know, maybe their local House member who's a Republican, but they would not vote for Trump. And that sounds like it happened in a lot of states, and which is very confusing to Trump. But I've also made the point that over the last 10 years, certainly, starting with the Tea Party, we were earlier talking about that and how the people are, you know, they're just being swindled. They're not very smart. And now when the Tea Party came in, all the elections, the quality of the intelligence of the Republicans who gain power, who get voted in, who get elected, has gone down and down and down. And they're pretty much down to the bottom of the barrel where they don't have anyone left who knows how to run a government. What you would call reasonable Republicans are no longer Republicans. They're leaving the party. Yeah. So the Republican Party, you know, I've said many times, I'm optimistic that they're doomed.
And
it's their own, like, their own fault.
Like Matt said yesterday, he said, you're enabling this party to keep voting these people in because they're not doing anything for you.
No, they didn't even have a platform in their last convention. And
they're not even going to have debates.
No, right. And even in the state legislature, they don't show up at the end of session when both the Senate and the House need to start having conference committees. The Republicans just don't show up, and then there's not a quorum. And then they finish the session, and they haven't passed the budget. Last year, they didn't pass the budget. They had to shut down the government. I remember a year ago, I was talking about my nephew trying to buy a house. He worked for Minnesota government, and he couldn't buy his house because the government was shut down. And even though it got started back up again, even a temporary shutdown messes everything up. And that's what the Republicans want. They want it to be a mess so that they can blame it on the Democrats. See what a mess everything is. And it's because they made it a mess.
Right. Right. But unfortunately, people aren't listening to 9:50 a.m. or, you know, KTNF so they can get the truth about what's happening. It's very frustrating, but it's just a mental thing where, you know, once people in their life realize that, oh, you know, I'm not really listening to people, am I? You know, because their family members are like, no, you're not. And you're a pain in the butt to be around. And it's like, they just don't get it. They don't get it. And then eventually when they do get it, you know, it takes a while. And we all have to wait for them to get it. But we'll probably be dead by then.
Well, something that I found really enlightening that somebody pointed out a couple weeks ago, and I wrote it down because I thought, okay, this makes sense. Because you and I are both sitting here, you know, sounding completely flummoxed by what's wrong with these people, you know? Can't they see what's going on? Can't they see that it's their – I mean, ugh. Well, the thing is that Republicans, they don't realize this, but what they really want is to tell you what to do, but they don't want anyone to tell them what to do.
And they want to dictate, just dictate, like George W. Bush said years ago. I want a dictatorship as long as I'm the dictator.
Yeah, it'd be so much easier.
And that's very true. He wasn't kidding.
No, he really did say that. But that is what.
So that's the thing is dictatorship is not governing. So that's why they're not good at governing because they don't want to be dictators.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, we told it all.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling, Lynette. It was fun to talk to you again. It's always fun when you call in. I'm going to be on again on Friday and Monday and Tuesday. So,
are you really?
Yeah. Matt's on vacation for like a week. So, it's like my parents are gone, and I've taken over the radio station for a few days. I can do whatever I want.
You can. Now you can do the show naked.
So. They have the Facebook camera still. But
All right.
Anyway.
All right. Well, I'll let you go. So have a good rest of your show.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling in. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. What I was going to talk about, kind of what I was teasing you about talking about, was back when we were having so many deficit problems when Pawlenty was governor, and then it took a few years for the Democrats, the DFL, to get back. We had to live through the 2010 thing when everybody got mad because the first African-American president had been elected in 2008. So we had to, tolerate the first wave of racist uprisings that began again 10 years ago. I remember in the 1990s, I thought we were done with racism. Of course, I'm a white guy who's never had to have any racism on me, so I know there was still racism. But, it seemed like we had evolved. Anyway, 2010, it all starts back up again. Anyway, the DFL in 2012 then was able to take over and basically start to run things the way they should be ran. We had a Democratic governor. We had a Democratic state house and a Democratic state Senate, and they passed something called, you've heard me talk about this before, but not for a long time, the fourth tier tax. It added another tier of taxation to the uber wealthy. And it raised taxes still, I think it was 0.8% on people making more than $153,000. Now, you would not get taxed on anything below $153,000, even if you were a billionaire. But if you're a billionaire, everything after $153,000, your taxes were raised. I believe it was 0.8%. Still not all that much. If you're a multi-billionaire and you think that you're going to have financial problems because your taxes got raised by 0.8%, well, then frankly, I'll use the word jerk. Can I say that on the radio?
You can, yeah. You're not very good with your money, too, if that's really going
right,
to break
that's
the bank.
A good point.
I could have afforded my bills, but then, my taxes went up by just a percentage, by not even a percentage point.
Right. Very good point that Brett makes. And I love how they say, you're disincentivizing people from making a lot of money. Okay, so you make $1 million a year, and now because your taxes are going up on everything above $153,000, you're disincentivized from making more than $153,000 a year?
I was always going to be a millionaire, Todd, but then I looked at the taxes and I decided, it's not for me.
Yeah. Well, it makes life easier,
Yeah.
You don't have to try so hard.
Billionaire, too, but again, taxes were too high. I decided that wasn't for me either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. So again, we go back to Lynette's point that what are they thinking? Anyway, sorry if I yelled too loud, I'm kind of in a yell too loud, and I'm biting my tongue every other sentence, afraid I'm going to say a word that I'm not supposed to say on the radio. Anyway, what happened then when the fourth tier tax came in is that we didn't have any deficits anymore. We were able to balance the budget in Minnesota quite easily, except for, of course, like now when Jeremy Miller completely lies when he says, that sounds like a good deal. on May 15th, and then a week later says, nope, not going to sign that, and then talks about it for another 3 weeks, maybe have a special session. Nope. I'm completely going back on my word. I am a liar. So says Jeremy Miller. I don't think he's verbally said that, but he knows it. Jeremy Miller, if you're listening, call in and argue with me on that point. You know you went back on your word as the leader of the state Senate. This is serious business, you know. That's when you get elected to something like that, you're supposed to take it seriously because the lives of everybody in the whole state of Minnesota is basically in a huge way under your control. My wife is on the school board. I know the school superintendent. I've talked to him and learned a lot from him about how schools work. Right now, the schools are completely in – they have no idea what they're going to do next year because the funding that they were told by Jeremy Miller and other Republicans that they were going to receive all of a sudden got – pulled out from under their feet by Jeremy Miller and the Republicans in the state Senate. It would have been done in the state House as well had the Republicans had enough power there. The Republicans do not care about you if you are a Minnesotan or an American. I'm going to come back and do some more details about the fourth tier tax and maybe go into a couple other things. Time is going so fast. Are we having fun? Is that what that means?
Yeah, we're down to one more segment when you come back.
Wow. Okay. Well, one more segment when we come back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. I programmed the drums on this. What did you program on this?
I don't think there's much else to program right now except that.
So we were talking about the fourth tier tax that came into existence during the 2013 session in the state of Minnesota, of course, by the DFL, when they held all three, the Senate, House, and governorship in Minnesota. And we all of a sudden didn't no longer have a deficit. We were able to balance our budget. And we have been able to balance our budget ever since then. The only time we don't – it's the times that we've had to shut down the government isn't because we couldn't balance the budget. It's because the Republicans wouldn't sign off and finish the session. They're constantly blocking. That's what they want. They want everything to stay a mess so that they can say, everything's a mess. You should vote us in and we'll fix it. Of course, they never fix it. They want to cut taxes. Cutting taxes is spending. When you cut taxes, that means that you're using government dollars to pay for that tax cut and the money does not come back. When the DFL passed the fourth tier tax cut, it raised taxes on approximately 5,000 people or families in Minnesota. It was somewhere between 5,000 and 5,500, I believe. Now, when you think about the entire population of the state of Minnesota, which I have no idea what it is, do you have a way of looking up the population of Minnesota?
Off the top of my head, I know it's right around 5.5 million.
That sounds about right to me. So it's, you know, 1/100th then of Minnesotans had their taxes raised by the fourth tier tax. But that 1/100th of Minnesotans held so much money in their pockets that their less than 1% raise in taxes completely balanced the budget of the state. That's how much money there is in the state and in the world. It's just that you have very little of it. But there are people that have mind-blowing amounts of money that they're sitting on. So much so that when you raise the taxes on 1/100th of Minnesotans, it changed the entire state budget from being in deficit to being in surplus. And you haven't heard the Republicans say that they want to get rid of the fourth tier tax. since 2013. The reason being, they knew if we got rid of the fourth tier tax, we would not be able to balance the budget. We would go back into deficit. And then it would be plainly seen by everybody that it was the Republicans' fault. Of course, it is seen by the vast majority of people that it's the Republicans' fault. And that's why the vast majority of people need to vote. If you didn't vote, vote. Don't boo, vote. So basically, I know it seems a little complicated, but the Republicans have not said a word, and they hope the DFL never says a word. That's why I talk about it so much, about the fourth tier tax and how it saved the Minnesota budget almost 10 years ago now. And that's what has made Minnesota prosper much more than it was in the previous 10 years, over these last 10 years. Hi, Brett, have you driven anywhere on any day where you have not seen construction going on this last summer?
I go by construction every day with a light rail around here. Yeah.
And not just light rail. Everything.
Exactly.
Everything's being fixed. They're fixing another bridge out where I live. They fixed a major bridge last summer. You know, traffic was majorly diverted around these areas because in my area, right in the middle of the mess of Lake Minnetonka Bays, there's only one little road and it's got five bridges on it. So when these bridges get closed, you got to drive an extra 5 miles just to get to Highway 12. And that's going on again this year. I don't mind because that bridge was scary. I'm glad they're fixing it, even if I have to drive more. Last year was another bridge, another major bridge that was way neglected by Tim Pawlenty. And so, you know, neglected for way too long, was being rebuilt. Another bridge about 5 years ago. So, I mean, and that also, you know, that means more jobs. When bridges need to get fixed, when there's more projects being done, that means more people get jobs. Minnesota is in the very top of the country right now with unemployment. And by that, I mean in a good way. I think it went down to between 2 and 2.9. It's 2 point something right now in Minnesota, unemployment rate. A year ago, I believe it was more than 4. Or maybe, you know, like a year and a half ago. Or even pre-pandemic, it was, you know, not as low as it is now. And when you hear that Republicans, you know, they want you to vote them in because nobody likes what the Democrats are doing. Well, here's something on the national level. You've heard talk about baby formula shortage. There was a bill passing $28 million for baby formula shortage to pay for more travel and things at the ports and all kinds of things. Funding to try and get baby formula to mothers. 12 Republicans voted in favor of it, 192 against it. Veterans benefits, 34 Republicans for it, 174 against it. Maybe they would lower the cost of insulin? You think maybe they would have the heart to do that? 12 Republicans voted in favor, 193 against it. What about the big oil and gas thing that is all Biden's fault? An oil and gas price gouging bill. 0 Republicans voted for it. 0. They're not trying to help anybody. All right, that's it for today. I'm going to simmer down and come back on Friday. Matt is on vacation, so I'll be sitting in. Who's sitting in tomorrow quickly?
Gregory Rich filling in tomorrow.
Gregory Rich will be here tomorrow at 4 o'clock. This is Todd Mickelson signing off. Until Friday, you're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We will see you on Friday.